What the Funk is up? The Weekly Scraps, powered by Everlast. They are the leading brand in combat sports training gear. You need gloves, you need hand wraps, you need a boxing bag. Everlast, one-stop shop, even some training apparel. All you have to do is go to everlast.com. Thank you to those guys. They are my sponsor, and they are taking care of us and making this easier for myself and my team, of course, to bring you guys the Weekly Scraps podcast. So make sure you go out to everlast.com. Make sure they are your first stop if you are ever in need of training equipment, training gear. Show those guys some love because they show us love. So we support them and they support us. High Performance Nutrition. Shout out to those guys. I can't preach on it enough about getting a company behind you, especially if you're an athlete. It doesn't have to be specifically combat sports, but any sports where there's going to be drug testing. They are third-party tested. They are certified by NSR. I think I said that right. NSF, Safe for Sport, third-party tested. So make sure you go check those guys out. Use my discount code at checkout to save yourself 10%. Elite Funk is the discount. Trendy Butler, they are a clothing subscription service. For $65 a month, you will have yourself a new outfit every single month right at your doorsteps. The best way for me to explain this is you answer a couple of questions based on your style, your taste, the things that you're into. And Trendy Butler's AI system, I do think they have a contact source as well. And once you get to talk to these guys and you guys formulate your style and try to figure out exactly what you're into or what you would like to try, you can always shift it. And you sign up. Boom. Done. $65. You got yourself an entire outfit. And the best part, you save yourself a trip from the mall or wherever you go shopping. I don't know. I know a lot of people doing these online things nowadays. I used to like going to the mall, but I would always end up spending like 2 to 3 hours there. So Trendy Butler has made my life so much easier. I don't go shopping as much as I would like to anymore because I'm just super busy. But I do like to look good, as you guys see from some of the stuff that I post on my socials. So Trendy Butler makes that so much easier for me. And for all my CBD lovers out there, Hydrocana, drink Hydrocana. These guys are going to revolutionize the sport of combat. And not just combat sports, just hydration in general. You're cutting weight and you need to rehydrate, you gotta go to Hydrocana. These guys have CBD infused water, aka H2O, high quality H2O, and they have CBD shots in a bottle. It's about 2 ounces. Now, these guys have been doing all the testing and doing things as scientifically as they possibly can. And they've figured out a ratio that helps you out in case you're hungover or you're severely dehydrated from cutting weight, and figured out the best way to get your cells from a molecular level. And I don't want to try to start talking all with this lingo as if I'm a scientist myself, if I'm more sure you might show. But I will say these guys have done their homework and I trust them. And based on all the data that I've shown that they have, it's been shown that if within about that 25-30 minute range after a long night out of drinking or a severe weight cutting situation such as MMA, when you're cutting down to a weight class, someone like myself who normally walks around about 162 to 165 pounds cutting down to 135 pounds and I need to bulk back up, these guys have that CBD that's gonna give you that perfect ratio, that perfect blend to help me get my body right back where it needs to be, where my cells can pull everything back into it and hold on to the things that's going to keep me from cramping, keep me from feeling like complete crap. And the best way to make sure that I have the best optimal rehydration that I could possibly have. Hydrocana, drinkhydrocana.com. Go check those guys out because they are the new boys on the block.
Hey, how's it going? How you been? What's scrapping?
The Weekly Scraps, motherfuckers.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Weekly Scraps, episode 30. Man, I am out here in beautiful Santa Monica, California right now. I did my first podcast episode with the one and only Brendan Schaub. It was the Food Truck Diaries. Fun time. It was great. You know what? Before I did the episode with Schaub, I never really knew what to think about him, but having the opportunity to meet somebody as a person as opposed to what you see in the personality in over the media platforms is a completely different experience than having that first one-on-one interaction. And he's a really cool, chill, down-to-earth dude, and I truly do respect that everything he has done, and especially the hustle that he's putting in now, man. It's next-level stuff, man. And to see people transition from MMA into other platforms and make something happen with such that small window of opportunity that we have, which is this that 5 to maybe 10 year shelf life of MMA, it's awesome, man. It's truly motivating and inspiring to people like myself who are looking to do other things outside of the realm of just MMA. So that was a really fun, cool experience. I watched some of the episodes on YouTube, and I didn't even know that I was gonna be doing the Food Truck Diaries. So it was cool to come in and do that and get fed, because I was starved, and we had these killer, bomb-ass empanadas. I think that's what we actually changed one of the nicknames, because I was asking the lady at the food truck, I was like, which ones are the go-to that I should definitely get? And she was like, oh, well, this barbecue one right here, this one is bomb-ass. And I was like, well, I don't know which one I want. I was like, I like the one that you call bomb-ass, and I'm taking your recommendation and the words that you use to describe it. I'm like, you sold me at bomb-ass, so I'm going to take me one of those empanadas. And then I had like a cheesy buffalo chicken empanada, and that shit was amazing. Oh my goodness, I'm getting hungry just thinking about it right now. But yeah, we had fun with the Food Truck Diaries. We shot the shit a little bit, Schaub and I, and you know, kind of gave him a little bit of background on my career and things like that. And it was cool. It's nice to see how much work he puts in the background and in the background of things that people don't get to see. So that was awesome. And like I said, man, it's motivating and it's inspiring to people like myself who are trying to get into this space and not really sure what exact steps to take. And instead of reinventing the wheel, just following the footsteps of people who are doing really good things in that space already. Especially being that we have a similar background in terms of MMA and being involved in athletics as a whole. He was an NFL player, I think, or I know he played football in high school. I'm pretty sure he was in the NFL for like a short stint, and I would have to double check and fact check that, but I'm pretty positive that's what they said on The Ultimate Fighter. And yeah, man, I gotta get somebody who can do this fact check thing for me, because I don't like saying stuff and not being sure about it. So this way I can give you guys the goods and you don't have to be like, well, I think it's right because he thinks it's right. You know, I want to make sure I know exactly what I'm talking about, but it is what it is. One day I will have a whole fortress of people helping me out, and everybody will be doing good and being able to make money in entertainment and spaces that they love and enjoy. Other than that, man, I'm out here hanging out. I'm supposed to do the Joe Rogan podcast today. Today is Thursday, and then I'm super pumped up about that. That is an experience that I've built up so high in my head. I'm just like, I just hope I don't get let down, and I don't think I'm gonna get let down. Just listening to the podcast and hearing Kevin Hart boast about it and saying how it motivated him to be a better podcaster himself and build his platform more because of the inspiration that Joe gave him, that says a lot. So I'm putting all my eggs in the basket, and I'm hoping, and I'm not worried about it. I think it's gonna be a great experience. Just being on Joe Rogan's podcast in general is super it's super dope, man. I would say it's an experience of a lifetime, you know. That guy's been around forever, Fear Factor, the UFC, his podcast, I think it's been around, what is it, like almost 10 years now? It was 2012, I think, was his very first episode when I was like backtracking all the dates. Even then, I got to double check again, but I think you guys get what I'm saying. He's done so many things. He's put in the groundwork to get to where he is, and I'm excited to get there. I might even hit him up and tell him we might have to do a sauna session because I don't have anything else going on, so I'm just hanging out. Then I'm driving down with my sponsors, Hydrokinna. They're based out here in California. Shout out to Kyle Paradiso. He's from Long Island, Massapequa. I'm living in his hometown now. This is where he grew up. He wrestled there, and now he's living in San Diego, living out his dream, and building this company from the ground up, and that's another inspiration in itself. And the other cool thing about it is you offer me equity in the company, so I am actually part owner in the Hydrokenna company, and I can't wait for it to really explode and people get to see all the great benefits it is that it has having a rehydration drink that's the equivalent of an IV bag, you know, in such a small doses in either the OR sticks, oral rehydration solution. So we call those ORs, the OR sticks, or even the 2.5 ounce shots of formula for people. So I think it's going to be a great game changer, especially people who are cutting weight like myself, who cut a lot of weight. I'm about 165 pounds right now. I've been eating and I've been crushing. And as Brendan Schaub would say, I'm thick with 3 C's. And I need to lose some weight. So eventually I would like to get in sauna and probably sweat like a pound or two off just to feel better about myself and sweat out some of that poison from last night. We went to, what was it? My man David Kano and I. David Kano, shout out to him. He actually put me in a short film. We did the pilot. It's called Layers with Dominic Columbus from Ray Donovan. He played the boxer. And Oscar Miranda, he's a IG star. And Morgan, I think, I'm just going to say Morgan. I think Harville or Marville. I think it's Harville. I forget what she played in, but she's also an aspiring singer and actress herself. So she's done a couple stuff. And, you know, it's just a great film, great people all around. And he's out here with me. And so he put that together, called Layers. We're hoping to get picked up by somebody. But still shopping around. Hopefully somebody sees the potential in this. And, yeah, we went to Warwick. We had a good time. We didn't get, like, any sections or anything. So we were hanging around with what people would call the normal people, quotes. I'm a normal person too. I like to have fun, chill, and just live my life like a normal person. Sometimes it's cool to not be looked at and people taking pictures of you while you're just out in a normal surrounding when you just want to enjoy your downtime and not have to be conscientious of what you're doing, how you're looking. And if I want to get sloppy, let me get fucking sloppy, dude. I like to have fun. I don't get sloppy like, oh, well, spitting and slurring my words on people, but I like to get crazy, you know, shirt comes off and just have a good time and let my inner Gian Volante, my inner man child. But that's my week recap for the past few days. Other than that, I'm not sure what else we did earlier this week in terms of myself. Monday got back, I taught class at the gym, that was fun. And then Tuesday I was supposed to go to Sarah's. I didn't make it. We had a beach day. Fun day with the team. We had a good amount of the guys and gals come out and we chilled pretty much all day, beach bummed it. Some of them actually went back to the gym and trained, which was super impressive. I told them, like, dude, I'm still on vacation. I still got my little thumb here that's still recovering, so I'm not really trying to push the envelope of let's be in the gym 24/7 right now. I'm enjoying my Long Island summers and enjoying my margaritas. But let's get into the weekend rewind. The first, I didn't get to watch Dana White's Contender Series. I did watch one fight, though. My man, Maki Pitolo. Where is this guy? Finished the guy in round one. Finally getting his due, getting a contract. I saw that Dana White gave out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 contracts to everybody. I heard everyone did a phenomenal job, so I got to go back and watch the fights. The only person I was familiar with was Maki Pitolo because I trained down in Hawaii a couple of times. And Joseph Selecki because he is from the Northeast circuit in Cage Fury. I think he might have fought for Ring of Combat maybe one time, but I know he's a tough dude coming up on that circuit in the lightweight division. Maki is a middleweight, and Maki looked like he was a smaller guy in there for sure. That guy was a lot bigger than him. That guy had an opportunity on the Contender Series. He came up short, and this was his second going, Justin Sumter. And Maki didn't waste no time, man. A minute and 37 seconds into the very first round. He got clipped a couple times. Boom, straight right. Looks like straight, I think it was straight lefts that looked like he just dinged him on the nose. And looked like he was in trouble early because a couple of those straights were finding their home super accurately. And eventually, Maki was able to get inside and start working the body and eventually start landing his own combinations. He has shorter reach. So I think maybe, I know he's a thick dude, but maybe there's a potential for him to go down to 170 when guys are more his size, because that Justin dude looked like a big boy. But eventually he got inside and he starts working the body, beautiful body work. And the guy, Justin, he holds on to like a clinch And Maki's like, fuck this. Just goes to town, ripping left hooks to the body, digging it. And the fascinating and cool thing about that sequence, he wasn't able to twist his body and pivot on his left leg to really get that body weight momentum and digging like a classic, typical liver shot. It was just arm punches and short torques of the body and just slamming those things in there, just bam, bam, bam. And eventually, man, Justin couldn't stay there and fight no more. It was too much on the liver for him to take. And anyone who's been hit with a liver shot, it is decapitating. It just feels like you want to just shit yourself. You know, you almost legit feel like you want to just shit yourself. It's not a fun feeling. Let's just say that. So if you guys don't know what that feels like, go get a guy and go get some feels. Go get a gal and go get some feels. Have them just one shot, boom, line you up in the liver and see how that feels, and you can kind of see what the fighters in there are going through. Now we're gonna talk about the UFC 239 card, and the best way to explain this card was pure insanity. And I was at a wedding. I was on my way to a wedding, so I didn't get to watch every single fight. But the chances that I was able to get to sneak away, so, you know, I would go dance a little bit in between rounds and then go back and watch the fight for the next round for like 4 or 5 minutes and catch what I can catch. I'm a junkie, man. I got to get my fix. But shout out to Marcel Robin. He caught himself. I think they did the saying, Marissa Murphy caught herself a Robin and Marcel Robin. So there's like the cool little cutesy quote that they... put together themselves for that. That was like one of the themes of the wedding. But it was cool, man. All the way out in Smithtown, we had a good time. And I got smashed again. But I'm chilling right now. I'm on vacation. I'm still celebrating. This is like a 2-month celebration for me. It's the summertime. What do you want from me? Don't judge me. This is a judge-free zone. I put in my hard work. Let me enjoy my downtime. But congrats to those guys. They are in Tahiti right now, too. And I'm super, super jealous. Bora Bora. And I show pictures and videos to Rebecca, my girlfriend, and she's just like, we gotta go there, babe, for hours when we get married. I'm like, there goes my bank account. So we're gonna have to compromise here, babe. We're gonna either have to simmer down on the wedding and how big it's gonna be, or the rock size on that finger, or we're gonna have to scale it back on the honeymoon. So you're gonna have to pick one of your poisons and figure out which ones you wanna dial back on. But hopefully we don't have to worry about that. Hopefully we make a ton of money and, you know, win the belt and just say, fuck it. Let's just have a blast. Let's have a ball and just go all out. You only young once, you only live once, right? So why not? If you got it, you got it, they say. And I'm already got some investments, so I think we're doing all right. The one kid I saw, Edmund Shahbazyan, that dude looks like he is legitimately the real deal. Middleweight, he finishes guy, Jack Marshman, tough dude, rear naked choke in the first round. There's not much to really break down about that. He's going to be a real serious contender in this division, in my opinion. I think he's a tough out. I think he's young, hungry, and there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be concerned about his ground game and his power that he brings to the table. So keep your eyes out on that guy. Bantamweight division, Yadong Song. He knocked out Alejandro Perez, who was at one point on a 4-fight win streak. He was on a 4-fight win streak. So that says something. For Yadong to go out there and finish him the way he finished him, super composed, super poised, sat in the pocket, eyes open like a fucking hawk looking for the prey, looking for that money shot. Alejandro, one split second, gets too wide on a strike, and Yadong sits down on that punch, lines him up, and comes with that right hand right down the middle. I mean, it was a little bit of a hook, but right down the middle, beat him to the punch, and right on the chin, snaps Perez's head back. And dude, it was over. Once he hit the canvas, he followed up with one more strike. He really didn't need to, but like, you know, like they tell us in the back room, you keep fighting until I pull you off of your opponent. Some people are able to kind of pull themselves back and not get that extra shot because they just don't want to. I think it looks cooler when you get that walk-off KO. It is a cool fucking clip to, boom, crack somebody and like, all right, bitch, I'm out. Drop the keys, mic drop, I'm out. But, man, he's I think, a real serious prospect. And the crazy thing about him, he's only fucking 21 years old. That is insane to me. 21 years old. I know he does, like, some kung fu shit back in China. And he's got, like, a sick thing, couple clips. I stalked his Instagram page. I do stalk my potential future opponents and the young guys that are coming up in the flyweight, bantamweight, and featherweight divisions. And he was taking a stick, bang, 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 modern day Jet Li, but real shit, you know, shit that can really fuck you up in real life, not like a movie type, just stunts. And it looked super badass, man. I was like, dude, this guy is he's gonna be a serious threat. The good thing that I like is he's got short alligator arms. And I like fighting guys like that, because guess what? I got the reach advantage. And I can stay on the outside and just pick him apart. But this dude is a serious, serious player. Striking like that, being composed and poised like that, hasn't really seen any... I don't think he's really seen much adversity yet, but I'm going to be keeping my eyes out for him, and I think you guys should be keeping your eyes out for him as well, because he is a true player training at a Team Alpha Male, and with Cody Garbrandt, Uriah Faber, and guys over there. So... keep your eyes out on that guy. Claudia Cadea back in the win column. I think, let me not say back in the win column. She is, 30-27. I thought Ronda might have won a round, but she dominated the fight, 30-27. Yeah, not much for me to say about that. I didn't really get to those. That was one of the fights where I had to go back and forth dancing on the wedding floor and going back and not getting yelled at so I could watch the next fight, which was Marlon Vera, another bantamweight. He gets the finish over a short notice replacement opponent. Second round, it was a little bit competitive in that first round. And then the second round, Marlon decided to open up. He takes him down right away. Because Cheeto, he kind of has a style where if you take him down, he's so comfortable off his back. This dude will just lay there with his hands behind his head, kicking at your feet, and he's going do-do-do-do, like a walk in the park, just waiting for you to come play in his guard so he can tie you up with his legs, either sweep you or look for a limb, and then eventually submit you. His jiu-jitsu, I think, is legit. I think anyone who takes him to the ground has to be very wary of what they're doing and the positioning of their elbows, positioning of their hands, because he does a great job of tying up the gloves, and slapping on submissions, man. Submission after submission. He doesn't just hang out there. You know, he's constantly attacking, and that makes it a scary guy because he's got a long frame. And we got a guy that long who knows how to use those legs like that. It makes it very difficult for guys to advance any type of position on him. So you make one mistake, just know he's going to be attacking your neck, he's going to be attacking your legs, or attacking your arms for arm bars. You know, I seen him get a Kimura on Brian Kelleher out in Kimura into the transition into an arm bar in Long Island, and that was at the Long Island Coliseum. And he submitted him. It looked like Kelleher was doing it right. Then it looked like he got kicked with something, and then he might have felt like switching over to grappling, and then once he switched over to grappling, Cheeto attacked that arm so fast, and slapped on that submission, and probably about 30 seconds later, he had Kelleher tapping. So he is a true player, and it's cool to see him. He's got a 4-fight win streak, I think a 4-fight finishing streak as well. He bounced back after that John Lineker loss, and that just goes to show you how tough Lineker is, and Lineker is cut, and he's fighting at one championship now, which is insane how they let him go. But I understand, you know, he's bitching, complaining to the media, saying like he's not getting fights. Next, you know, the motherfucker keeps pulling out of fights because he keeps getting hurt or whatever the case may be. But Vera's a tough dude, man. Beats this guy, takes him down, reverses the position. He was on the mat, he was on the ground, gets up, starts walking him down, walking forward. Eventually, I think Hernandez takes a shot and he gets stuffed. As he gets the shot stuffed, Vera just kind of bullies him over, steps over into like a quarter mount position. He throws a couple punches and slides an elbow in there, and eventually Hernandez turns. It looked like he might have been hurt to the body a little bit. I think it was like a front kick, because Cheeto's got those long ass legs that he just kind of whips in there, and eventually he gave up his back and was like, fuck this, I'm out. And yeah, I felt like Hernandez could have fought back a little bit, but it's just one of those situations when you're hurt, I guess you're kind of just waiting for the perfect moment to be like, all right, I'm going to let you put your hand around my neck and make it appear like I couldn't move, even though I could move. I don't know. I guess when you're hurt, you're hurt. And everyone, like I said before, and I think a previous interview, I said everyone has that button. Everyone has that breaking point where there's only so much that they're willing to take or where they're willing to go. And you have to be mentally prepared to want to go to that place of no return where you're willing to take so much damage and leave your body on the line to find any type of opening to either stay in the fight or to find an opening for you to come back in the fight, if that makes sense. And that's the way I kind of looked at that. Just sometimes you see when someone, like even the Conor McGregor fight, for instance, him and Khabib, he was in a compromised position with Khabib on his back, but he could have moved. He could have moved. Everyone might say, oh, well, the cage was behind him. I'm like, dude, I've trained this situation. He could have moved. Yeah, he got dinged early in the fight. He was a little bit rocked. I get that. But like I said, people find their way out. If he wanted to move, he had enough energy to fight after the fight and do all these other shit and shenanigans. So you're going to try to tell me that he didn't want to, you know what I'm saying? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. He could have found a way out of there. His hand was right there on the neck crank. All he had to do was reach up and grab it. He opted not to do that because now he could say, well, I put up a good fight, live to fight another day. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if that's your thing, just know that everyone who fights you eventually will try to bring you back to that breaking point. And if you've been broken once, if you've quit once, there's a great chance and great opportunity that you're more than likely going to do that again in another tough situation, in a tough fight. And perfect example, as someone who doesn't quit, Ally Quinta, who stays in the fight and keeps moving, keeps advancing position, even when he's hurt and is looking for a way to try to get back into the fight or just to stay in the fight and showing that I'm not going to quit. You're going to have to fucking take me out here on a stretcher in terms of me not being able to move. I have to be absolutely exhausted to the point of me not being able to physically move any parts of my body. So there's a big difference. And that's what I thought that fight with Marlon Chito Vera versus Nolan Hernandez. My rant is over. But the next fight, Arlen Allen takes on the returning El Nino, Gilbert Melendez. And I will say one thing about this matchup. I'm not going to go into crazy details on this fight. Because after the Chito Vera fight, I had to go back and put my dancing shoes back on for the wedding. I watched rounds one and two, and I think that was enough for me. Melendez did not look like the killer Melendez that we know from Strikeforce and all his other previous fights that we remember back in the days. His fights with Anthony Pettis, his fight with, who did he have another crazy fight with? And he got his leg like really, really chewed up. I can't really remember right now. Stevens? Yeah. Which Stevens?
Jeremy Stevens
got his leg chopped. Oh yeah, the calf kicks, right? Yo, chopped down. He had like the craziest welt on his leg. It was like a huge hematoma. Did he fight Eddie Alvarez too?
Diego Sanchez.
That was an insane fight. But you see that fight in terms of like his grittiness and how mean he was. And he's like, yo, I'm willing to take it there. I'm willing to go out there and scrap. And the scrap pack, you know, his team with Jake Shields, the Diaz brothers. I'm not sure if that scrap pack thing is still a thing anymore. It doesn't seem like it. And
he beat Masvidal too. Remember
in
that?
My opinion. He fought Masvidal. So he's had a lot of tough fights where it looked like El Nino really was going to be an eventual UFC champion, or at least maybe a couple time title challenger, in my opinion. And this fight with Arnold Allen just looked like the Gilbert of old was kind of long and gone, and he was kind of in there to just, I'm not going to say he went in there to collect a paycheck. I'm going to say he kind of just went in there, maybe a little gun shy, I would say. And it's not like, I don't think he was knocked out to the point where you could say that, but it just seemed like he didn't have the aggressiveness, and he did pop for some type of steroid, or I'm not even going to call it steroid, some type of performance-enhancing drug right before he was supposed to fight Ally Quinta, and he had that fight got scratched. And it just seemed like maybe that was the catalyst and what kept him super aggressive, or maybe he just got older and he's just like, life's good. I'm not as aggressive as I once was when I was a young bull, and these young guys are coming up, and maybe he just doesn't have that killer instinct in him anymore. And that was kind of a sad fight for me to watch of him, just because of the memories that I have of him, seeing him go out there like a Carlos Condit. I think that's the perfect comparison. Seeing his last few fights, him coming out of retirement, it's just not the Carlos Condit that we grew up watching, that we remember of old, where he's going out there being the savage that he was, the natural born killer. And I think it was kind of the same scenario here. And Melendez is a super cool dude. He's got a great career ahead of him in terms of the analyst industry. He breaks down fights better than no one else. And I think he's content with that role. And, you know, it gets to a point where, you know, people always talk about fighting with the young bulls and, you know, that point where you want to stop. At what point do you mentally be like, you know what? I'm okay. I don't really feel the need that I want to fight anymore. You know, that burning desire to want to compete is not there. When you start finding other avenues of work and you get a little bit older, you have a family, you make a ton of money already, you get a little bit content. It's kind of like what people say about Conor McGregor. He's made so much money, it makes no sense for him to return to fighting. He doesn't have to. What does he have left to prove? And it's one of those situations where his life is good, he's happy. Yeah, he might like still training, but for him to get up and put in all the hard hours of training and getting banged up from a training camp, it doesn't make a ton of sense for you to want to do that anymore. And I can see that being the case with the once a savage Gilbert Melendez, you know. And kudos to him, because I think he's still had a great career, and he's accomplished so many things that a lot of people haven't been able to do. So that was my thought process on that fight. Then we have Michael Chiesa. He goes to decision with Diego Sanchez, and I'm not gonna lie, I was actually really, really surprised that this went to a decision. I thought Chiesa might be able to get him out of there, being that he was a much bigger man. I think his jiu-jitsu is a little bit more seasoned, although Diego Sanchez is a savage on the ground when he gets you down. But he was never able to capitalize on any of the positions that he had on Michael Chiesa. Mike just turned into a scramble and got back up to his feet, or reversed the position and started controlling Diego Sanchez. And I know Chiesa was talking in his post-fight interview saying, like, I can't lose to that guy. That's like if he were to lose to the guy doing all the weird stuff in the background, in the back room and before the fights, it's just he doesn't want to be the guy to lose to him. And, yo, Diego's been around forever. Fucking legend. The guy's a legend. No matter how he's never won UFC gold, but he is a fucking legend. The guy's been around since Tough One, the last of the Mohicans. The only person still fighting from the Tough One season, and probably to like maybe 5 or 6 or 7 seasons, he's probably like the only guy still competing in the UFC at the highest level and still getting wins, beating a tough prospect in Mickey Gall, and then going to a decision with Michael Chiesa, who is a beast of a man at the 55-pound division or the 70-pound division. He's a big boy. So that says a lot. So kudos to Chiesa going out there, getting it done, getting the victory, and continuing his resurgence at the welterweight division. Then we had the lightweight division. Jan Błachowicz knocks out Luke Rockhold in round 2, 1 minute and 39 seconds in it. I heard him saying that Rockhold was saying something that he has small feet, some weird shit like that. I don't know what the fuck that means. But Błachowicz says now he felt his feet because he knocked him out. He kicked him in the head with that question mark kick, clipped him, and that was at the end of the first round. Followed up in the second round, didn't let him off the hook. He had Rockhold against the ropes and put him out. And I think at this point in Rockhold's career, Dana White touched up on this a little bit. He thinks it's time for him to hang it up. And I'm going to say I think it is time for him to hang it up as well. In my personal opinion, he's a former champion. He's beat some of the greats of of this division. Not light heavyweight, but of the middleweight division. He's had some crazy storylines and epic buildups with guys like Michael Bisping, Yoel Romero's. You know, he sells the fight. He does well with that. And I think it might be that point where he's been knocked out so many times and taking hard punches, even in the David Branch fight, albeit he came back and won that fight. He got banged to the point where it looked like he got dinged up pretty good, where it looked like he might have been out of there had David Branch pushed off and kept it at striking range instead of going in and initiating a clinch. You know, I think he's walking that fine line where if he gets clipped one more time, I think he's going to get put out even faster. Maybe if he wanted to do one more fight just to say, I want to be sure that I'm done. Maybe you don't do any sparring whatsoever. Just get in sick fucking shape. You know how to fucking fight. And maybe do some touch sparring. Just get your timing down. Don't get extra concussive blows in a training session in a tough training camp with big guys. Because it's not like you're at my weight getting punched. You're getting punched by big dudes. So your brain is getting shaken way worse. And then for you to go out there and get knocked out again, that's going to be very detrimental to your health, in my personal opinion. And I'm no doctor, but I don't think consecutive knockouts like this is something that you want to keep doing, and especially if you want to have some type of career outside of the MMA space. I mean, I know he's got the deal with Ralph Lauren. He doesn't really need to do much of anything else. He's a good-looking dude, no homo. But, you know, if I was a guy, I would date him. But not because not his personality. His personality, I'm not gonna lie, he could be very, very smug, and it's kind of a weird thing. I don't know. It kind of walks around like his shit don't stink. But I don't know. I've never been like that. I never understood people who are like that. But it is what it is. Different strokes for different folks. But I do agree with Dana. I do think it might be time for Rockhold to step away. But back to Blachowicz, man. He set those combinations up, and I always said I'm not really sure what he's really, really good at, but he was talking about that left hook, and I saw glimpses of greatness in terms of this guy could be back as a contender in this division. I know he lost to Santos, but dude, that question mark kick was beautiful. The left hook that he put him down with, beautiful. I think he just found some reassurance in that last fight with Luke Rockhold. And I think rightfully so, man. This guy looks like a true player, for real. Don't leave your girls around him. And, of course, we got to talk about Jorge Masvidal, Mr. Three-Piece in a Biscuit, Mr. Street Jesus, Mr. Jesus, Mr. Hey, maricón, you want to talk some shit to me? I'm going to come out there and show you my flying knee, okay, my friend? He goes out there, spectacular fashion. And the beautiful thing about this, they showed a clip with him and Mike Brown drilling this. Hands behind the back, chill demeanor, relax, and then shifting off to the side like a small little drift, like sidestep to the side, to the right, and then out of nowhere, boom, like a 40-yard dash, like a shotgun out of a barrel. He runs full speed and just launches a flying knee at the pad with Mike Brown, and Mike Brown goes flying backwards. I'm surprised he didn't get lifted off his feet into the next dimension. And then he does the same exact thing against Askren. And I'm like, bro, that is mind-blowing. The only time I've ever seen anything like that before, and actually I've seen it twice. I seen it with Duke Rufus and Eric Koch, where he fought, I forgot the guy he fought. I think it was Yosdenis Codeno, the Panther. This was a while ago. This is when I made my UFC debut. And this, I'm dating myself. I'm going back 5 years. And Duke Rufus is holding the pad for Eric Koch, and they mimic the way that his opponent is going to fall after landing a cross. And he's lining up, he's like cross, slip cross, and he throws a cross, boom! And then Duke just fades. He goes, it's kind of like Pac-Man, it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. And he falls to the ground. This guy, I shit you not, his opponent, when he lands that cross, falls the same exact way. I'm like, is this guy fucking Rain Man? Is he Rain Man? I don't even understand. Like, I can't even wrap my head around how accurate it was, and everything that they did in the back room happened exactly the same way in the fight. And Ray was breaking his balls about it. I was like, yo, what are you, like, fucking Mr. Miyagi or some shit? I don't understand how the hell that happened, but it did. And then the other person, Jose Aldo versus Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor in the back room mimicking Jose Aldo's footwork, and you know, he kind of over exaggerated a bit, but then he goes how he's going to be shifting on his feet, you know, bouncing in and out, waiting for the timing, and then he steps back and he throws a straight left cross, boom, cracks him, and it happens the same exact way, cracks Jose Aldo, coming in overly aggressive. And it's like they just knew that that's exactly how the fight was going to go, and it's like they had a crystal ball, man. And Masvidal, dude, I hope he gets a fucking title shot. There's been no one else who put in as much groundwork as him from all the way back to the Kimbo Slice days. Beating guys up with the Street Jesus haircut, hair in a man bun, young kid, just beating ass, grown men asses. And now put into the octagon from Bellator, Strikeforce, to the UFC. Never really. And then he would always have those close fights, those split decision fights, where he would lose. And I would always say, like, I don't know, man. It's really tough to say. It really just depends on how you're scoring a fight. But I think now he's kind of just letting it all go. And I would think sometimes he would hurt guys and kind of, like, take his foot off the gas. And now he ain't taking his foot off the gas. He's going out there to beat your ass for 15 fucking minutes, 25 fucking minutes, you know? So this is a different era. The resurgence, as he calls it, the three pieces of biscuit, as he calls it, and a soda, I should say. It's not a biscuit. He calls it a soda. This is a brand new man, reinvigorated. I love it. And I've been a fan of his from back in the Kimbo Slice days, watching his YouTube videos. And it'd be nice to see him get his fair due and get the title shot next. He should. I don't see anyone else that should jump him. Colby Covington versus Robbie Lawler, that's not a number one contender fight. Well, if Robbie Lawler wins, he gets the crack at the title? I don't think so. If Kobe Covington wins, he gets a crack at the title? You can argue that because he was the interim champ before he was stripped, so I get that. But then he got hurt, so they had to strip him of the belt. So now he's back in line. He hasn't lost, but he's back in line. It's hard to say that a Kobe Covington will sell more than a Jorge Masvidal fighting for a world title. I just don't believe it. This is no way you're selling me that. If you're going to ask me, who am I shelling out my $60 for on a pay-per-view event to watch in a title fight, it's Jorge Masvidal all fucking day long. I don't want to see Kamaru Usman versus Kobe Covington in terms of the next fight in this division right now. The next fight that I want to see, 100% Jorge Masvidal, a guy who's been around the block a very long time, has highlights after fucking highlights. He won two fights in one night before Leon Edwards and Darren Till. So, Jesus, man, I think, and no pun intended when me saying Jesus, I think the guy, what else does the guy have to do? He knocked out the hometown boy hero, I think, in the second round against Darren Till. And then the first round, 5 seconds, 3 seconds before the ref had to get over there and stop him. What else, how else can you get a better highlight? And there's just no other, I don't know, what else does a man have to do to get a goddamn title shot is what I'm saying. And I think Dana needs to do the right thing and give that man his shot, because he's going to put asses in those seats. Amanda Nunes, I don't think there's much else for anyone to say about Amanda. She is the greatest of all time, period, in the females division, in my opinion. Chris Cyborg, Holly Holm, Valentina Shevchenko twice, Ronda Rousey, Raquel Pennington. She's just seems to be head and beyond above the competition. I mean, Valentina Shevchenko was the only one who gave her a competitive fight, in my opinion. I mean, obviously they went to a decision, but everyone else, she kind of just batters. It's usually just one-sided. Valentina's the only one who really gave her any pushback, and Valentina's a champ at 125. So how good is fucking Valentina? They're both beasts. There might just be Valentina, Shevchenko, and Amanda Nunes, and everybody else. I think Valentina might be able to even compete with Cyborg. I know she's a lot smaller. Don't think I'm crazy for saying this, but her footwork is phenomenal. She's got a sick head kick. I think Cyborg will have to get her hands on her and take her down. I think it should be very, very hard to hit. Kind of like a Henry Cejudo versus Marlon Moraes, you know, the bigger man versus the smaller man, David and Goliath. I think that's a kind of similar situation. I'm putting thoughts out there into you guys' head. Now, think about it. Let it marinate a little bit. Don't call me crazy just yet. Just let it marinate. Look at what Valentina Shevchenko has done in her fights ever since losing to Amanda Nunes and everyone else. It's just, the competition is just different. The way they compete against each other compared to everyone else, there's no competition whatsoever. They just dominate. She's a beast. I'm not sure what's going to be next for her. They might have to do a rematch with Chris Cyborg if Cyborg wants the rematch. I know she's been doing a lot of things overseas. I think she's back, though. I think she is lined up for a fight. I think she was supposed to fight. I don't want to misspeak, but I could have sworn I saw some news on her fighting somebody, but it is what it is. But yeah, I think she's a fucking animal, man. I just don't know what they're gonna do with her next. Maybe Gerandame, the winner of Gerandame versus Aspen Ladd. But I think the female division needs to play out a little bit more to make another true clear cut contender for Amanda Nunes. I think she's done her work. She needs to go out, chill, and just relax a little bit and just keep honing her skills and let this division get hot enough for her to come back and really spice it up once again. So right now I just don't think there's anybody out there for her to fight. John Jones versus Thiago Santos. Man, split decision. One judge actually gave it to Thiago Santos. I'm not quite sure I agree with that decision. In my opinion, it looked like John Jones was controlling the dance the entire time against the Muay Thai specialist and Thiago Mareta Santos. Crazy. Santos had some moments, but nothing of significance where you could be like, oh, he heard him. Oh, he heard him. I don't think so. And I know he had an ACL tear, MCL, PCL, and meniscus all in one night. I get that. And people are going to say, oh, well, unless he had that coming into the fight, which I do not think that's the case. I think it happened in the fight, whether or not it was from him throwing the kick or from him being kicked by John Jones. That remains to be seen. Only one man could truly tell us that, and he would have to be honest with the media in that situation and let us really know which way to take this conversation. But from what I saw, I'm going to say John Jones was the captain of that ship the entire fight. I think he was dictating the pace. He was the one pressing forward. And I don't give a fuck if you're pressing forward. If you're not landing, it does not matter to me. If you're pressing forward and you're getting outmaneuvered and you're just chasing, it doesn't matter. You're not, what, do you win the fight because you press forward? No. You have to be landing strikes. And I think John having him against the cage, landing strikes over and over, even though it wasn't a lot of combination, not a lot of volume. I think he did a great job of controlling the distance, landing the cleaner, clear-cut strikes where Thiago Santos was hitting a lot of arm. John Jones was doing his patented frame and get out of there with the eye poke range, measuring the distance. That's a joke. Don't kill me. But, you know, he's just a very elusive guy, hard guy to hit. He did throw that one head kick that John got one hand up at the very last second. That could have been bad. Could have been bad. Because Marreta is a freaking brick house. If he landed that kick, that could have been goodnight Irene. But he got, John Jones got his hand up, and he was able to block the kick at the very last second. That's the picture that Dana White posted on Instagram, saying how tough Thiago Santos is. So that's where I'm at with that fight. I don't think it was, I think the fight was a little underwhelming, but then when you break it down for what it was, John Jones fighting the guy where he's strongest. I remember people giving GSP a ton of credit, saying that he would beat guys at their own game and things like that. That's what John Jones would, that's what he does. He's beating guys at their own game. His last two opponents, they're both stand-up guys, and he beat them both on the feet. And pretty convincingly, in my opinion. Not like, he didn't beat Santos the way he did Anthony Smith, but he did beat him in a way where it was like, I don't think this guy really has much for John, even in a rematch. He's a tough dude, you could say that. He was landing, he was trying to land some blitz punches, but nothing was really getting through of significance. And the one time that it looked like he might have landed something, John just slipped out of the way and casually just strolled back to the center of the octagon and then continued advancing forward. I'm just trying to think back to the fight. I don't understand how people were hyping it up to say, like, dude, this was John Jones' biggest test. I mean, if this was his biggest test for him not really throwing a lot of volume, then fuck, man, how good is John Jones? What are we saying here? Like, what are we comparing? You know, and that's the way I'm looking at this, and I'm trying to give the credit where it's due. I mean, he went to a decision with John Jones, but is that something to really like brag about? I know people gonna say, well, he's the greatest of all time. He went to the decision with the greatest of all time. Yeah, I get that. I know that, but for you to go the distance, Ovince St. Preux went the distance with John Jones. Does that say much? If you don't really land anything of significance, does it really say much? Besides the leg kick that tripped John up, and Thiago was trying to land a follow-up right hand, but he came up just short and missed. Where he loaded up, he looked like he wanted to try to tee off on John and just swing one big-ass haymaker, but I don't think he expected John's leg to give out like that from that first initial leg kick in the first round. But for the most part, John Jones was the matador, man. He was the one controlling that fight the entire time. Ole, ole, ole. And anytime he got too close and Thiago thought he had an opening, John really just stiff-armed him, defense, rolled with the punches, got out of there, and nothing really landed. And I know in boxing, they don't really score punches that bounce off the shoulder. They score punches that land clean to the body or clean to the head, as far as I know from a boxing standpoint of scoring points. So when I'm looking at the MMA standpoint, yeah, people can say, oh, the volume made it look like he was winning the fight. But when you watch the fight in slow motion, and I do this. I break it down by watching, like, holy shit. In real time, it looked like Santos was really getting in that ass. But when you break it down, you slow it down, you watch that film in slow motion, nothing really landed of significance that was clean. It wasn't like John Jones' front kick to the body. It wasn't like John Jones' front kick to the chin that lands and touches Thiago Santos' chin. It wasn't like his knee stomps, his oblique kicks. It wasn't, I didn't see anything that landed where I could be like, yo, he's scoring some fucking points right now. He's really, it looks like he's beating John up. The best thing I think he did was chopping down the legs, and he's been the first guy I can see that actually utilized the leg kicks and the calf kicks properly against the long and elusive John Jones in any fight that I can remember. And I know people always say they're going to attack Jones's legs, but it's hard to do that. Once you get in there, you realize how much harder it is to hit the guy. That game plan kind of goes out of the window, in my opinion, what I think. But that's I don't know. I think John's going to be on top for a while, man. And I'm liking this division right now because it's heating up. There's a lot of young contenders coming up. The Dominic Reyeses, the Alexander Rakic, the Jan Błachowicz. Wyman's now up at 205. So there is a lot of potential now for him in that division. And I'm excited to see how it plays out because there's some new life, some new blood, some fights to become really, really excited for. So I'm looking forward to the future of the light heavyweight division because it's been a long time staple of the UFC. And that's been one of the most popular divisions. The Chuck Liddells, the Tito Ortizes, and the Randy Couture's, those guys from way back when. All right, so our upcoming events this week, we have ESPN Plus 13, Sacramento, California. That is Deronda May versus Aspen Ladd. That is the main event. Then the following weekend in ESPN 4, San Antonio, Texas, we have RDA versus Leon Edwards. This is going to be a fight that answers a lot of questions. How good is Leon Edwards? Or how good is RDA Rafael dos Santos? Is he going to be able to take out the surging contender in Edwards and solidify his claim to go back forward to challenge for a title at 170? Or will he get pushed back down the ladder and have Edwards further stake his claim and set himself up for a potential fight with Masvidal? He might have to, if he wins this fight, I can see the UFC making a matchup with Masvidal, and after that, the winner of that fight gets the next shot at the belt. And I wouldn't be mad at that, but I just want to see Jorge Masvidal fight for the fucking world title, man. That's it. Is that so much to ask for? And then, of course, we have UFC 240, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Max Holloway versus Frankie Iron Edgar. I cannot wait to see this. This is the third time this fight was booked, and I'm excited to see who is the better man, man. It's been a long time coming. I've been wanting to see that match for a while. Now that Frankie's a little bit older, I'm a little hard pressed to believe that he can do it. But then it's a fight, man. Anything can happen. You can never count Frankie Edgar out, as you can see in his earlier days in his career, always coming back from adversity. So I can see that being the case again. But when you see what Holloway did to Ortega, and you see what Ortega did to Edgar, I know you can't do MMA math, but I just feel like these younger guys just have the goods right now. They just have the goods. But like I said, Frankie's iron strong. You never know. That's why I'm super excited for that fight as a fan. There's not much else I want to talk about. There are some what's scrapping in news, but I really don't want to get into all of that. I want to... Whoa. You gotta be fucking kidding me. Am I not recording? I am not recording.
No.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, the whole time?
This is insane.
Bro, it looks like you're recording from back here. Let me see.
On my laptop I'm talking. Get the fuck out of here. Oh, that hurts my heart. I'm gonna have to use this. I'm gonna just have to use that.
That's what I thought we were using.
Nah, I would have put the mic into that and did it that way, but fuck me, man. That sucks. Oh, damn. I fucked up, guys. I fucked up, but guess what? We rolling. Damn. It is what it is. You know what? This episode is just gonna have to be what it is. I'm sorry. It is what it is. We're going to call this episode The Is What It Is. Oh, man. What the fuck, you motherfuckers? Damn. Goddamn, bitch. Whatever. It is what it is. I think that's a sign. It's like, yo, get your ass out and go enjoy the sun out in California. But guess what, guys? I'm going to wrap up the episode right there. The main scraps, UFC Sacramento, the return of the California kid, Aspen Ladd versus Geronimo. And we're going to just end it on that note because I'm pissed off. This shit wasn't fucking recording. This, oh, man. I'm so mad. I'm so fucking mad. Ah. But I hope you guys enjoyed that. Hopefully I can turn the volume up on my phone and it'll be good enough for you guys to for me to use for that. I don't know how I'm gonna work this out for iTunes now. That's the one thing I'm gonna have to figure out, but we'll make it work. We'll make it work.